WrestleMania 35 is in the books. The longest, certainly one of the longest, I don't see how it can't be, the longest WWE show in company history. And I see a lot of people tweeting me, I see things in the Facebook group and other posts and other places. Should WrestleMania be expanded to 2 days? Is that the solution to this long, bloated show, to just separate it into 2 days? Hey, New Japan might be doing that next year. They're going to be running back-to-back days at the Tokyo Dome. Although I don't think both days are Wrestle Kingdom dates, but they're running the same building back-to-back nights. Should WWE do something with WrestleMania? Is that what needs to be done? Fuck no, that's not what needs to be done. Because you had over 30 years of WrestleMania just fine on one night. So enough with the talk of a two-day WrestleMania. Is it time for a two-day WrestleMania? We didn't need a two-day WrestleMania the first 30 years. We sure as fuck don't need one now. When your lead announcer loses his voice as the show goes on, you know that your show is too fucking long. This is your Sound Off Extra review for WrestleMania 35 from MetLife Stadium in the shadow of New York City. A show that gave us the three big babyface victories a lot of people were hoping for, which surprised me, surprised a lot of people that they gave us all three on one show. I give them credit for that. I didn't think they would do it. But by the end, being there live, I could not wait for this show to be over. On the whole, I think it was a good show. I would not call it a great WrestleMania. Most of these, to me, just felt like Raw matches. And having two or three excellent or really good matches, to me, does not make this overall, this fantastical WrestleMania that I see a lot of people calling it. And look, I absolutely loved the Daniel Bryan Kofi Kingston match. It was my favorite match of the night. It was the right outcome. It was an emotional outcome. I loved it. I thought it was great. And there was nothing, not even the women in the main event, who could come close to matching the drama and the emotion of that WWE Championship match. After the Kofi match, it was never able to rise back up to that same level. They came alive at the very end when Becky won the belt, and they were very happy about that, but it never quite got back to that same level after Kofi won the championship. But you look at the Twitter poll results so far, and you can still vote. Polls open for another couple of days here at Solomonster. We've already gotten more votes than any other poll I've ever put up ever. Over 6,500 votes. It's a pretty good sample size. 79% of you voted thumbs up. 21% of you voted thumbs down. And I'm not surprised by that. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I don't think it was a thumbs down show. But I would be curious to know what the breakdown or the breakout is of people who thought it was a good show and people who thought it was an excellent show. Then I think those numbers would be very interesting. And let me say this now and get this out of the way. Because this did ruin a good part of the show for me, and I'm trying to be objective here as I go along. I really don't think my overall opinion would be too different had this not have happened. And that is these frickin' lights that they started just blasting in front of everybody inside the stadium, starting with the Randy Orton AJ Styles match. Up to that point in the show, I mean, it was still kind of daylight outside. I assume it has to do, as the sun goes down, they have to kick in some extra lights, whatever the reasoning is for it. The first match of the main card, all the stuff on the pre-show was fine. Starting with the Orton and Styles match, they started showing to, and not just my section, but a lot of sections all around the stadium, on either side, these bright lights that just shone right into our eyeballs. And so you heard, I'm sure you heard if you were watching on the network, or even if you were in the stadium, you heard a lot of chants, fan chants during that match. Maybe you even heard them saying, turn off the lights. They were starting musical chants, trying to tell WWE, hey, turn off the lights, or at least turn them down. You know, this wasn't just a few people. These were large sections being affected by this. And I can't tell you how many messages I saw on social media or messages I got from people, not only about last night, agreeing with what I was saying, but also people who said, oh yeah, that happened to me last year. or that happened to be 2 years ago in Orlando, or it happened to be at the Royal Rumble, or it happened to be at SummerSlam. This is apparently a chronic problem that WWE has, where they put these lights on. I'm sure they have their own reasoning for it, but it's clearly affecting people's enjoyment of the show and their ability to watch the fucking show, and they don't do anything about it. They still, after all these years, have not come up with a solution. They have not figured out a way to correct the issue. And it's no different than anybody who buys a ticket and ends up getting seated in front of a giant column, and you have this obstructed view. You're obstructing people's views by blasting, you know, bright lights in their eyes. Randy Orton had to go on Instagram after the show was over and apologize. And this is Randy Orton. Randy Orton is not the kind of guy that you would expect to get an apology from for anything. Randy Orton went on Instagram when the match was over. He posted a picture that somebody had sent him of what it looked like. So you know people aren't exaggerating. And he said, "For the live crowd that saw this during my match at WrestleMania at MetLife, I would like to apologize on behalf of WWE for screwing up and shining a bright light in your eyes for 95% of our match. You missed a really great fucking match." That comes from Randy Orton. And you know what? Kudos to him for apologizing on behalf of the company. But that's not Randy Orton's responsibility. Randy Orton has nothing to apologize for. He was in the ring doing his job, having his match with AJ Styles. Randy Orton wasn't working the fucking lights. Randy Orton wasn't in the production truck. So he is in no position to have to apologize for anything. This is completely and totally on WWE, and they need to get their shit together and make sure that doesn't happen again. Because they don't seem to care. Because this isn't the first time. So if anybody is listening to this, get your shit together. Because that's no way to treat people who paid money. And it doesn't matter if you're up in the, you paid $100 for your seats or $400 for your seats. It shouldn't matter where you're sitting. You shouldn't have a bright light, by the way, it got worse as the show went on, shining in your fucking face. So let's start with the kickoff show, shall we? We had Tony Nese and Buddy Murphy opening the kickoff for the Cruiserweight title. Good match, Murphy's Law. Nese got his foot on the ropes. Murphy kicked out of a 450. In the end, Nese hit the running Nese, as he calls it, in the corner. Wins the championship, the first of three title wins for native New Yorkers on this kickoff show alone. So for one night, they did away with this notion that you always lose in your hometown or home state or whatever. Nese is from Long Island. I mean, none of these people are from New Jersey, but Nese is from Long Island. Carmella is from Staten Island. And Zack Ryder, he's another Long Islander. And Curt Hawkins is from Queens. So it was a good night for all of them here on this show. We had the Women's Battle Royal. Carmella got the surprise win. I certainly was not expecting that. I'm not quite sure what the point of that was. Asuka, poor Asuka. She's not had a good 2 weeks. She loses her SmackDown Women's Championship in the lead-up to WrestleMania. And here she looked dominant for a stretch in this Battle Royal, but then she got dumped out by Sarah Logan, of all people. Ember Moon, she was back from her elbow injury, so she had some ring time. Kairi Sane, who I'm sure will be up on the main roster in time for next year's Pirate Ship WrestleMania, she was in the match from NXT, as was Candice LeRae. They were the two NXT entrants. When Logan dumped out Asuka, she appeared to be the winner until Carmella reemerged from the outside. She kicked Logan out of the ring for the win. They recycled the same finish from last year's Women's Battle Royal when Naomi tossed out Bayley. Because they are devoid, apparently, of any original ideas. And look, Battle Royal finishes, Royal Rumble finishes, they are recycled all the time. Which is fine if they're done years apart. Not back-to-back years in the same match on the same show. Lacey Evans did not appear in the Women's Battle Royal. I thought for sure she was coming in and winning the whole thing. She wasn't even in the match. She didn't even do her little, you know, saunter out to the ring and then her about face and back to the dressing room. Nope. But she did make an appearance later in the show to do that. Maybe this woman will literally do nothing but that for the entirety of her career. And then when they put her in the Hall of Fame, she can have like the CEO of Fitbit induct her. I don't know what the point of her walking. She likes walking. That's all I know about this woman. She dresses up. fancier than anybody I know who goes for their morning run, and she disappears. And you would think, okay, it's WrestleMania, this has been going on long enough. Surely they're going to have her do something, get physical, be in the Battle Royal, maybe even win the Battle Royal. Not that I would have wanted to see that, but nope. Nope. Just another walkout wave and leave. We have the Revival defending the Raw Tag Team titles, of which supposedly a new title belt design for the tag belts has been completed. We could even see it as early as tonight on Raw, but from what I understand, they are done. I don't know what they look like. I don't know if they're a throwback to the old school tag team belts. That would be nice. And I don't know if it's for both sets of belts or just the Raw Tag Team belts, but there are new belts coming. They defended against Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins. We had Dash Deckham Wilder. He was super over with the audience here at MetLife. I hope that man gets a fucking raise after what he did at the Hall of Fame the other night, which I'm going to talk about later. Don't you worry. I am a Revival fan for life after that. Dawson gave Hawkins a brainbuster on the floor. He rolled him inside. Hawkins, at that point, is just playing dead. I could see from where I was sitting, I could see the Survivor Series 95 finish coming from a mile away. And sure enough, Hawkins was playing possum the whole time, and when Dawson reaches down, he gets cradled, and Hawkins and Ryder pick up the win, and they win the tag team titles. And thus, Curt Hawkins' legendary losing streak has come to an end at 269 matches. And credit to him. He's told this story before. There was a time when Curt Hawkins, you know, was talking to Vince McMahon, and Vince booked him, I think, to win a random TV match, and Hawkins did something that you never hear anybody doing. He did the opposite of what you would expect. He argued all the reasons why he should lose. Normally, somebody would not like the fact that they're losing. They would try to argue, hey, I should win. He did the exact opposite because he's smart. He was smart enough to realize, look, this is my whole gimmick. I've got something here. I've got a losing streak. It's better than nothing. You're just going to have me win a match on TV with no plan or anything, and then what do I have? Then I have nothing. I have dick. He was smart enough to realize that. He convinced Vince it wasn't the right time. This felt like the right time. This felt like the right time. WrestleMania, kind of in his backyard, MetLife Stadium. He and his best friend, they win the tag team titles. I mean, it just seemed to be the most appropriate place, which is why I picked him in the predictions that I did the other day. And sure enough, turned out to be a nice little moment for the two of them. Then we had the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Michael Che and Colin Jost of SNL bailed early. They were not seen again until the end of the match. You know, watching EC3 march down to the ring, surrounded by the likes of Titus O'Neil and Jinder Mahal and The Ascension and No Way Jose, was quite the sad sight. And when I did my predictions, I talked about Eli Drake from Impact, who is a lot like EC3. If you compare their kind of the trajectory of their career and being in WWE, although in Drake's case it was just in developmental, but being in WWE and then leaving and going to Impact and finding success and being champion and making a name for yourself, all the things that EC3 did, he created this new character, and you know, his body, everything about him was different, so that when they hired him back, you would think, well, this guy's got the makings now of potentially being a star. Let's see how far he can go. We know he could talk. And we see what they've done with EC3 since he's been promoted to the main roster. And in my predictions, I said, word of warning to Eli Drake, because there have been some rumors that maybe WWE has an interest in bringing him back. And I said, if they do, run. Like Bray Wyatt would say, run. Run for the hills. And I mentioned this because Impact, just the other day, I read, fired Eli Drake. So, he may need that job after all. Maybe not. Maybe don't take my advice after all. Although you never know, there might be some elite interest in Eli Drake. But yes, he is now unemployed and is in need of work. And so he'll end up, I guess, wherever he ends up. Gallows and Anderson, they were dead men walking here in this battle royal. They're as good as gone, I'm sure. In September when their contracts are up. They couldn't even get their fucking names right in the WrestleMania program. They had a picture of Gallows and they had Anderson's name underneath. It was like, what a joke. So anyway, they're done. The Hardys were in there. Very much over in front of this audience. They tried to eliminate Braun Strowman towards the end. The best part of this battle royal, by the way, was before it even started. Everybody was in the ring. Everybody had marched down to the ring. The Hardys made their entrance. They're all in the ring. We're waiting for the bell to ring to signify the start of the match. And I don't know if they went to commercial on the network. I don't know if they were showing a video package of Braun and the SNL geeks. I don't know what was going on here. But we were listening to the Hardy Boys theme song on a loop for about 7 minutes. That was the best part of the match. I was doing the Jeff Hardy hand motions. I'm doing them now. You can't see me, but I'm doing them. Anyway, as the Hardys are trying to dump Braun out of the ring, the SNL guys sneak back inside. They try to eliminate Braun. They fail. Strowman eliminates Matt and Jeff, and so it all comes down to Braun Strowman and Che and Jost. This is what they've been building now for weeks and weeks and weeks. He eliminates Michael Che in the safest possible way. Colin Jost grabs a microphone, and he says, look, I brought my therapist with me, and I think, Braun, that you should talk to him. So this guy playing his therapist goes up to Braun. Of course, Braun destroys him, lays waste to him. He picks up Colin Jost, rather, and very conveniently tosses him into the waiting pile of wrestlers on the outside. And Braun Strowman wins the Battle Royal. This was dumb. And I'm still wondering, frankly, what the point of any of this was. When you consider that not a single time, this is what I had people tell me, because I won't sit through SNL every single week, but apparently not a single time in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks has WrestleMania or the Battle Royal been promoted or mentioned on Saturday Night Live. Braun didn't make a cameo. Like, there was a time when making an appearance on SNL, especially if you were a wrestler, was a big deal. You know, in the lead up to the first WrestleMania, they had Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. I think they hosted SNL. There was a time back in 2000 when The Rock and Triple H and Big Show and Mankind, in the lead up to WrestleMania 2000, they were on SNL. So I don't know if it's still as much of a big deal. It kind of is. And you would think, okay, well, this is stupid. Or maybe you didn't find any of this funny, especially when they had Colin Jost talking about, isn't this real? Is this fake? But you know what? Maybe it's part of some cross-promotional thing, and they're going to have wrestlers on SNL, and that's kind of a big deal. Nope. No appearance, no cameo, no mention, no nothing. All this wasn't a cross-promotion. This was a promotion for SNL. That's all this was. And this was the end result. Alexa Bliss, she was out to introduce WrestleMania. She then, as the host, of course, she then introduced Hulk Hogan, making his first WrestleMania appearance since, I believe, 31, which would have been when the NWO came out to help Sting. a lot of good they did in his match with Triple H. So Hogan poked fun at himself. He called MetLife the Silver Dome. Then he corrected himself and called it the MetLife Center. The joke was funny 5 years ago when Stone Cold mocked him for it. Now it's just lame. In the middle of all of this, and Hogan's music is playing and he and Alexa Bliss are doing the Hogan poses, Paul Heyman, he's had enough. He storms down to the ring while Real American is still playing, which needs to be his new entrance from now on. Paul Heyman doing his penguin waddle down to the ring with a very stern, serious look on his face as Rick Derringer is blaring throughout the building. Need to see more of this. So Heyman gets in the ring and says, look, if Brock Lesnar isn't going on last, he's going on first, so he can get back to Las Vegas where he's appreciated. And that was obviously a UFC crack or a UFC mention, had nothing to do with AEW. I know some people thought that. So for the first time ever, WrestleMania opened with a Universal Championship match. Brock Lesnar defending against the Nutslayer, Seth Rollins. They gave us the blueprint basically for that quick, explosive match that Goldberg had with Brock at WrestleMania 33, which I thought was great. Just two big bulls going at it, 4, 5, 6 minutes, whatever that match was. That was great. That was almost the perfect Brock Lesnar, modern-day Brock Lesnar match. They kind of followed that here. The match was a lot shorter. This was a 2.5-minute match for what, up to this point, has been positioned as the top title in the company. This is the biggest championship in this company. They opened WrestleMania with it, and it was over in 2.5 minutes. Now, Rollins, after a ref bump, he was being thrown around, tossed over the announce desk. His back was all red and just welts everywhere. He got F5'd on the floor, German suplexes. He was getting his ass handed to him. And the only reason that Seth Rollins got the upper hand and ultimately won was on a ref bump, he was able to give Brock a low blow, like the one he gave him on TV last week. And it just makes Rollins look silly that he can only beat Brock Lesnar, you know, by leaving his testicles in tatters. But you know what? It was fast-paced. The crowd was up for it. Most importantly, they got the belt off of Brock Lesnar. They got the belt off the part-time prince. And now maybe having a champion around for a change will actually give them a new toy to play with on Mondays. And maybe it could help make the show a little more interesting. Maybe. Maybe just a little bit. But hey, Brock had the right idea. I'm sure he loved this. Brock had the right idea. He was probably back home, tucked in bed under the covers before the show even reached the midway point. Because you know he didn't stick around for this. So up to this point, we were 3-for-3 in title changes on this show. AJ Styles against Randy Orton. This is where our issues in the stadium began with those fucking laser beams in our faces. So I had to go back this morning and watch the match back on TV because I didn't see any of it. I completely missed this entire match live. I went back earlier. I watched it. I thought it was fine. I was actually disappointed. I was left expecting more. You know what? A similar feeling to what I had coming out of the AJ Nakamura match at WrestleMania last year. It wasn't a bad match, but I expected more. And when it was over, I was kind of left a little disappointed. Now, hopefully this isn't some kind of pattern developing with, you know, AJ Styles matches, because his match with Shane McMahon was maybe the best match on the WrestleMania card 2 years ago, and he had a really good match with Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 32, which was his first WrestleMania match. But I think the match this year, I think with Orton, it was a good taste, I think, of what the two of them could do, but I don't think it was their best. And I remember saying the same exact thing about AJ and Nakamura when their match was over last year, and they went on to have better matches than the match they had at WrestleMania. I suspect we'll get the same thing with AJ and Orton. We'll get at least one, if not multiple, more pay-per-view matches that probably, and maybe they'll have stipulations, and it will probably end up being a lot better than what we got here. AJ hit the 450, Orton kicked out. Orton hit the RKO, AJ kicked out. Orton went for a super RKO up top, Styles escaped. Later on, he hit the phenomenal forearm, and he got the clean pin on Randy Orton. It just never felt like it really got going. And I also, by the way, think this match was hurt to some degree by the chants that you heard from the crowd, because everybody was trying to get WWE's attention because of the lights, and it took away from the match. And that's why I'm also so angry about the light thing, and I keep mentioning it. In the future, there's no reason that matches like this should suffer from fan chants, who had every right chanting, by the way, because of some dumb technical screw-up on WWE's part. That's not fair to the wrestlers in the ring. But if the fans can't see shit, what do you expect? So I ended up watching the rest of the show live on the screen above the ring. That's how I watched the entire rest of the show. There was a giant screen above the ring. The light wasn't too bad if you looked up. And so that's where I watched the rest of the show. We had the Usos, The Bar, Naka Rusev, and Aleister Black and Ricochet, Fatal 4-Way for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. I also missed this match live. I had to go back and watch it this morning. I think Cesaro may still be swinging Ricochet. He went around so many times, so many revolutions on the giant swing. I lost count. They had this giant Tower of Doom spot where Ricochet was able to roll through on his way down. Stereo super kicks by the Usos to Sheamus. Double Samoan splash for the pin. Usos retained the tag team titles. I thought this was very good. We had The Miz and Shane McMahon. Falls count anywhere. I thought... Now, going into this show, I praised this match in that of all the matches on the card, this was one of the top two, maybe three matches that I thought were the best built, best promoted matches going into WrestleMania this year. I thought this match was largely boring. Shane was going to give Miz his flying elbow off the top rope, down through the announce table. Miz's father, Mr. Miz, stepped in to protect his son. Shane climbed down, he motioned, "Get in the ring, old man." And George Mizanin proceeds to march up the ring steps into the ring. This guy's fighting stance is something to behold. This was quite the visual here. He puts those fists up, though. He's ready to... Now, he's not moving. So they're showing him up on the Titantron. He's got his fists up. He is probably scared stiff. Think about it. This guy's not a performer. He's standing in the middle of the ring. People are screaming. 75,000 people, however many people are in the building. He's probably shitting himself right now. So this poor guy's standing there. Shane starts beating him up. And The Miz sees this from the outside. He darts into the ring like a man possessed and tackles Shane down. This is like Randy Savage attacking Ric Flair when Flair started kissing Miss Elizabeth at WrestleMania 8. Only not. That was much better. But it also involved Randy Savage. So to be fair, if you have something that involves Randy Savage, it's automatically going to be better. So they brawled into the crowd. I don't think they got back into the ring at all after this. That was it for them in the ring. They brawled into the crowd. They brawled over by the international announcers and was climbing on their tables. It was really hard for me to see what was going on. It looked like they fought up onto some kind of scaffolding that they had there for the cameras, similar to what Triple H and The Undertaker did in their match at WrestleMania 17. If you remember that, I do. That was a damn good match that WWE likes to pretend never happened, but it was maybe one of the best matches they had. But anyway, so they brawled up onto a similar type of scaffolding. Miz in the big spot, the big finish, the big close, gave Shane a suplex off of that platform. It probably was a good 10 or 12 foot drop, I'm guessing, down through the cardboard down below, which even my brother, he was watching at home on the network, and after this spot, he texted me, and he's watching it, and he goes, "That was softer than my bed." I'm like, well, what do you want him to suplex him on concrete? What do you expect? Part of it also is the way they film these things. I don't know if there was an easier way for them to film this where it's not as obvious that you're being suplexed onto just a couple of giant boxes. Maybe they could find a different way to shoot this. One of the things that always puzzles me is when they do these big, elaborate spots where the guy crashes through something, like a crash pad or something that just looks so ridiculously phony, they'll show it to you on the replay. It's like, can you not shoot this from a different angle that doesn't make it so obvious? So they crash through the cardboard or whatever it was, but the way they landed, Shane ended up on top of Miz. He got the pin. Shane McMahon steals a win, which means, I guess, that this feud is going to continue onward. This, as I said before, one of the best belt matches going into this pay-per-view. I did not think this was that good. It lacked the intensity of a real fight between these two. When you consider how personal it's gotten, this just did not have the intensity and even the brawling and stuff. It just wasn't that good. It just wasn't. Speaking of not good, we had the Boston Hug Connection, the Divas of Doom, the Samoan Sleeping Pill, and the Iconics for the women's tag team titles. Some of Bayley's balloons malfunctioned during her entrance and didn't blow up, which was very sad. Bret the Hitman Hart made a brief appearance here. He came out after Natty and Beth to meet them on stage and kind of send them on their way. He didn't go down to the ring with them. And it was great to see Bret Hart here. They had brought the Hall of Famers out earlier in the show, and it was good to see him. I think he had a brief hospital stay after the Hall of Fame the other night. He was having some hip issues as a result of the assault that I have not had a chance to talk about yet, but I'll talk about it now real quick. Took place at the Hall of Fame the other night. I was at Madison Square Garden for the New Japan Ring of Honor G1 show, and I'm checking my phone, and I'm getting messages from people saying, "Did you see what happened to Bret Hart?" And I was like, oh my God, what happened? I thought maybe he collapsed. He had some kind of a health episode. I couldn't imagine what happened. And then I saw what happened and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it made me so angry. I mean, it would have made me angry no matter who it was in the ring. But I'm the biggest Bret Hart fan you'll find. And so when I heard about what happened and then I saw the video from all different angles, it just pissed me the hell off. And there were a lot of different thoughts going through my head. The first one being, I actually didn't think that new Hall of Fame setup they had was all that bad. I actually kind of liked the way that it looked. Now I doubt we'll ever get to see it again. But forgetting all of that, I've been saying for years on this podcast, long before anybody was physically attacked like they were on Friday night, but I have been saying, or Saturday night rather, but I have been saying for years, the Hall of Fame does not belong in an arena in front of a large crowd of 10 to 15,000 people. And I know why they do it. It's another event to sell tickets to, and they'll make $1 million or $2 million in tickets or whatever they're gonna, and some merch and whatever they're gonna make. And that's why they do it. That is pure and simple. The only reason they do it, the only reason the Hall of Fame was even brought back and resurrected after years of there being no Hall of Fame anymore. In 2004, they brought it back. They put it out on DVD. Because the first Hall of Fame back was not, I don't believe, was in a big arena setting. That started, I think, in the following year when Hogan went in. But from the moment they brought back the Hall of Fame, it was purely a marketing and promotional vehicle. They didn't bring it back out of the goodness of their hearts because, oh, it would be such a nice thing to do. What a nice thing it would be for us to be able to give a platform to honor these people, and we'll give them a plaque or a ring or whatever it may be, and they'll get to come up in front of their peers and make speeches. They only brought it back to make money off of it, which is why everything I'm saying now is going to fall on deaf ears. This will never happen. But I believe now more so than ever, the Hall of Fame does not belong in an arena setting. Get it out of the fucking arenas. People don't know how to behave. They don't know how to conduct themselves. And of all the events they have, and the fans are free to chant and do what they want, the Hall of Fame should be the one night, if it means something to these people who are getting dressed up and they got their bow ties on and they're going out there and they're making speeches, and to them at least, it means something. They deserve better than this. Even when Brett, after he got attacked, he got tackled by this guy, by this Bob Marley wannabe looking rat face motherfucker who tackled him down to the floor. Thank God everybody jumped on this guy. Travis Brown was in the ring, all the wrestlers. Why you would attack a wrestler when the ring is surrounded by wrestlers is beyond me. But this guy got his ass tackled to the ground. Some guys got some good shots in on him. Dash Wilder got a good sucker punch in on the guy. Maybe not the brightest move, but you know what? I'm sure he doesn't regret a thing. I know I wouldn't if I were him. But the guy tackled Bret Hart to the ground and took Natty down with him. Natty was standing right next to Bret during his speech. She went down too. She could have gotten hurt. But Bret, to his credit, he got right back up and he continued on with his speech. He told stories about King Kong Bundy and other people. And it was one of the better speeches of the night from what I've seen. I haven't seen the full show yet. And so credit to Bret for just being a total champ, a total pro, going right back into it, not skipping a beat. But here's a guy who's a stroke survivor, has had major head and concussion issues before. He's a cancer survivor. And this idiot, this animal, this freak, jumps in the ring and, of all people, tackles Bret Hart to the ground. Now I've seen there's some information that came out about, I'm not even going to talk about the guy, his name, his background, his social media. I don't give a fuck. And I wish other people wouldn't mention his name or show his picture on their websites. You know, like, I was talking to SE Scoops, and you'll notice on their website, not one mention, not one picture of the guy or anything, and that was by design. And kudos to them for that. Unfortunately, not every website did that, but why give this guy any more attention by putting a name to the face? But what a piece of human waste this guy is. And of all people, like I said, a stroke survivor and a cancer survivor, and you're going to charge into the ring and tackle this guy to the ground. What did you think was going to happen? I so wish they would have dragged his ass to the back, locked him in a room with the biggest guys on the roster that you could possibly find. And I said this on Twitter, let the security guards, who apparently may have been on a smoke break anyway, let them go take a smoke break or let them go on their lunch break and disappear for 5 minutes. That's the way it should be in situations like this. I used to say that all the time when guys would storm the ring in WCW. Scott Hall once, I remember he stomped on this guy's head. Good! Good! He should have stomped on his head with the other foot. That's what these people deserve. Now, the company may end up having some legal issues because of it. So like I said, maybe it isn't the smartest move in the world, but I say good. The guy got off easy. He's being charged. I saw 2 counts, I think, of assault and 1 count of reckless endangerment. Good. That's the bare minimum of what he should be charged with. But thank God Brett's okay. What if this guy had gotten into the ring with a knife? What if he had somehow snuck a knife or something, somehow slipped it into the building, and got in the ring and shanked Bret Hart right in the middle of the ring? You know how much worse this could have been? But that the fact that that was even able to happen, that never should have been allowed to happen in the first place. And obviously the new setup had something to do with that, which is why I don't think we'll ever see it again. But if they were in their right frame of mind and going to do the right thing, they would take the shit out of the arenas. Believe me, there's plenty of other ways they could find to make money. Do some other event. You want to make money off another event? You don't make enough money as it is? Fine. Find something else to do. The Hall of Fame should be the one night that you take it into a smaller venue and you really keep it as something special amongst the wrestlers and the legends. If you're going to do it, that's what it should be about. Because clearly the fans do not know how to conduct themselves. Even when Brett got himself together and started doing his speech again, there were some nimrods in the crowd whistling and catcalling and chanting. Get it out of the arenas already. They have no business doing these events in the arenas in front of the large crowds. And I wish they would take it out of there. And thank God Brett is okay. And it was great to see him here at WrestleMania. So I know people were asking me about that. I figured now would be a good time to talk about it. So I'm sorry for going off topic here. But anyway, those are my thoughts on the Bret Hart situation. The match itself, though, unfortunately, this women's tag team title match was bad. It was pretty bad. There was just something very off about it. I didn't like it. I didn't think it was all that good at all. Natty stacked Sasha and Bayley on top of one another at one point for a double sharpshooter spot. Tamina came out of nowhere with a super kick to break it up. Beth Phoenix hit the super glam slam off the ropes. I don't think I've ever seen her do this before. From the middle rope, and then Bayley kind of climbed up onto the top rope, but she hit Bayley with her glam slam off the ropes. Peyton Royce sneaks in, throws Beth outside the ring. Billie Kay steals the pin to win the titles for the Iconics, and the crowd did pop big for this. There were a lot of Australian fans, international fans, who were going nuts, even in my section, when the Iconics won, and so they had their fans at MetLife, and you heard them, because I went back and watched the TV version. There's a big pop there at the finish. I thought the match itself, though, was no good. Then we had Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston for the WWE Championship. It's very suspicious. The first thing I noticed was that the hemp belt was on a podium at ringside. I don't remember that being the case before. And it kind of looked like there might have been something underneath. So all of a sudden, and this is before I saw the t-shirts, that there had been t-shirts that WWE Shop was already promoting with Kofi Kingston as WWE Champion, which I'm glad I didn't see that before the match. But that to me was a tip-off that we might be getting a title change here. They went on to have the best match on the entire show. This was, I thought, just a great match, great fun, great drama, great emotion. It was one of the matches I was most looking forward to going into the show, and more than any other, I feel like this is the one that really came through and delivered. Bryan was torturing Kofi through different parts of the match. He tried to tap him out with the lapel lock. There was one point he had him locked in the hold, and a lot of people thought that he was going to tap out, and thankfully that did not happen. Kofi was able to break free. It looked like he was even hulking up or Kofiing up at one point, whatever you want to call it. And the people, they were rising and rising and rising. There was every kick out, every near fall, every time he would reach the ropes, it was building and building and building just perfectly. And the crowd was totally pro Kofi, and he was able to fight back and catch Bryan after Rowan was taken out by New Day on the floor to kind of even the odds a little bit here. Bryan got taken out with the Trouble in Paradise kick, and he did not kick out. And the referee counted three, and the place went crazy. And just like that, Kofi Kingston is the new WWE champion. There were people celebrating. There were some people crying. It was great. It was a great moment, and this is what WrestleMania is all about. WrestleMania should be about moments like this. It should be about payoffs like this. I know not all the time the good guy can win, but it just felt like any other outcome in this situation was going to be the wrong decision to make. And I was hoping and praying they would do the right thing and not fuck up the show by having Bryan win or having New Day turn on Kofi, which they may eventually do. I mean, hell, they may do it this week. I don't think they will, but there was no other appropriate outcome than the one we got here. They did the right thing, and it was awesome. I have nothing negative at all to say about this. It was great when the match was over. You could see the emotion on Xavier's face. They brought Kofi's kids into the ring, and they were tossing t-shirts out into the crowd. It was just that, you know, the pyro was going off. This was excellent. This was great. Samoa Joe and Rey Mysterio for the United States Championship. Rey injured his right ankle in a match with Baron Corbin last week on Raw. And he had posted on Instagram earlier in the week that he was praying his ankle would be okay in time for WrestleMania. It was not. They let him go out there. He had a few moves. He had a 619, but he ended up getting locked in the choke. He passed out. And so in 60 seconds, just like that, it was all over. And Samoa Joe, in his very first WrestleMania appearance, gets a dominant victory. And that, I like that. Now, could they have substituted Ray with Kevin Owens or even John Cena? You know, have Joe throw down an open challenge or something, get a Joe-Cena match? Sure, I mean, they could have done that. But as long as the show is running by this point, I really don't have a problem with them cutting this and some of the other matches short. Like I said, first WrestleMania appearance ever for Joe. He was the one who was hurt, I believe, the first two times. Maybe actually the first time he wasn't hurt, but last year he was. And so here in his first match, he gets a dominant win. How many times have I talked on this podcast about Samoa Joe coming out and talking the talk, best talker maybe in the entire company, but he never backs it up. And he was in grave jeopardy of falling into that Bray Wyatt pattern of, boy, this guy talks a big game and he talks a lot of shit, but when push comes to shove, he can't deliver. That was the reputation that Joe was kind of getting, and more wins like this will help kind of bury that, hopefully once and for all. And so I really didn't have an issue with what they did here. We had Roman Reigns against Drew McIntyre. This is a match the crowd did not care about at all. And part of it was we were still suffering from Kofi hangover from that great championship match. People started a wave in the upper deck. If you heard a commotion during the match, that's what it was. It was a wave. Some people weren't participating. They would boo. They would try to start it again. They didn't care. Drew got the full bagpipe treatment during his entrance. He dominated the match for a while. Reigns hit a Samoan drop on the floor, put him back inside, Superman punch, ooh-ah, spear, 1, 2, 3. That was it. And then Roman got a little emotional when the match was over. And why not? He wasn't even supposed to be on this show. This guy was fighting for his life a few months ago. Thought he would be probably for a lot longer than he did. Now here he is winning a match at WrestleMania. But the match itself was just the complete embodiment of a Raw TV match. That's really all this was. Elias then came out for a concert. He came out to sing to us. They had a video up on the screen of multiple Eliases playing various instruments. It's like clones of Elias in the same video. And then a videotape played, a videotape, that tells you how dated I am. A video played of Babe Ruth playing for the Yankees, calling his legendary shot in the 1932 World Series. And out came the Doctor of Thugonomics, John Cena, to his old music. He was wearing Babe Ruth's old number 3 Yankees jersey. John Cena, a kid from Boston, comes out to a video of Babe Ruth playing for the Yankees wearing a Yankees jersey. That makes sense. Although it isn't the first time he's done that. He actually did wear a Yankees jersey and a hat, I think, once on TV before, back when he was doing the original gimmick. He would wear all different kinds of team jerseys, and I think he wore Yankees colors once. But in any event, he did his shtick. This was very weird. I mean, I enjoy the old character. I really liked it, like when he was feuding with The Rock a few years ago. He came out on Raw that one night, Doctor of Thugonomics. He tore The Rock to frickin' shreds on the microphone. I enjoyed the hell out of that. This was just, I liked it, I guess, but this was just weird. It just, I don't know. It just felt very weird, very forced, if that makes sense. He poked fun at his own movies and said that his movies suck. He called Elias a piece of Shih Tzu and showed a graphic of a Shih Tzu dog with Elias's face on it. He told Elias, "Your face looks like my nuts, only you have a hairier bush." Then he gave him the five-knuckle shuffle and the F-U. I like it when Cena goes old school, but you mean to, and this was my biggest issue with this, when this was over, okay, for as excited as everybody was to see old school Thugonomics John Cena and hear the music and all that stuff, when this was over, I sat there and I thought to myself, you mean to tell me that your grand plan for John Cena at WrestleMania, your big plan that prevented him from being used as part of the Kurt Angle storyline that prevented him from potentially wrestling Kurt Angle at WrestleMania in Angle's farewell match was him dressing up as a character he played 15 years ago to beat up Elias. The same Elias that he beat up last year at WrestleMania. Really? That was your great plan? We got Baron Corbin because of this. I think this was hardly worth it. But hey, he said Harry Bush, right? So come on, Solomon Monster, don't be such a killjoy. How can you not love this segment? He said Harry Bush. Come on, man. All right, well, enjoy your Harry Bush. They and you are out of your fucking minds if you think that this was a better idea than doing something with Angle and Cena. Triple H and Batista. No holds barred. They went 25 minutes with this. 6 hours into this show, they went 25 minutes. This was so slow, and this was so boring. Look, I hope it was worth it for Batista to get his one last big match. I did enjoy Triple H using a pair of pliers to yank out Dave's nose ring, which explains why he's been wearing one since he came back. That's a little seed that was planted there, I assume, from the opening angle. This was just too slow and too uninteresting for me to really get excited about. I mean, they tried three different times they tried to break the announce tables on the outside before it finally collapsed. Triple H kicked out of the spear. He kicked out of the spine buster. He kicked out of the Batista bomb. Batista then kicked out of the pedigree. Look at these indie spot monkeys kicking out of finishers, right? You know, people are going to say that about the New Japan guys or the Ring of Honor guys, like from the MSG show the other night. But they're silent when these guys do the exact same thing. Guess what? It's not an indie thing anymore. It's not just an indie thing. It's not a New Japan thing. It's not an ROH thing. It's a pro wrestling thing. Go watch that first Shawn Michaels Undertaker WrestleMania match. It's my favorite WrestleMania match of all time. What do you think they did for half the match? They kicked out of finishing moves. They kicked out of super kicks and choke slams and tombstones and last rides. But when you do it right, with the right people, it can work. Here, I just didn't care. Ric Flair showed up, he handed Triple H a sledgehammer, which he used on Batiste. They actually jumped off of the ring steps, which were already in the ring. And so there was this cool visual of Triple H kind of sort of flying through the air for the sledgehammer shot. He finished off Big Dave with a second pedigree and won the match. I didn't really think this was all that great. I really didn't. And you know what? Now that I think about it, this was the exact same match. The exact same kind of match that Triple H had with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 29 in this very same building. And I didn't like that match either. And Batista officially retired after this match was over on social media. He posted a message. He officially retired from pro wrestling. He said, "Thank you for letting me entertain you. I love this business. And whether you cheered me or booed me, I am grateful for being a small part of your life. I am officially retired from sports entertainment, and I am grateful for every second of my amazing journey." So a very nice, classy message there from Dave Batista, who will be missed, even though I wasn't a big fan of this match. And it turned out this whole feud really was very underwhelming. I was very excited when I heard he was coming back, and he was kind of almost like portraying this Hollywood Batista character on TV. I thought there was a lot of potential there, and they never really went far enough with it. Maybe they only had him, I'm sure, for a limited amount of time. But I have enjoyed Batista's career by and large. He got over at a time when he really wasn't expected to. Everything was sort of being built around Randy Orton. And that Batista character, when he was the henchman, he was the muscle of Evolution, just naturally and organically started to catch fire and get over on his own. And that was a great storyline with a great build to what was a great WrestleMania match that did big business. I mean, that WrestleMania that year, 21, I think it did something like 1.2 million buys. And they didn't have some big celebrity on that show. I think that was the Akebono show, maybe. Nobody knows who the fuck Akebono is. I mean, they had Stone Cold on Piper's Pit, but that show was really largely carried by their own talent and by the main event, and it paid off. And they did big business together. And Batista went on to become a big star. And even when he had that brief heel turn before he kind of retired the first time, or left the first time, I was enjoying that character, you know, WWE champion, kind of Hollywood heel, Batista wearing the vest and talking about John Cena kissing babies and fat women and all that. Like, that Batista character was so enjoyable, just such a joy to watch. And it's too bad it lasted all of 2 or 3 months, kind of like Hollywood Rock. So, you know, he will look back, I think, on a career that he can certainly be proud of. He's a Hall of Famer through and through, just a matter of when they want to induct him. We had Kurt Angle's farewell match against Baron Corbin. Kurt looked as good as he has looked in any of these farewell matches that he has had. He hit multiple German suplexes. He hit an Angle slam at one point, had Corbin locked in the ankle lock, trying to tap him out, but Corbin was able to escape. And we even saw the old school Kurt Angle moonsault. And I did kind of cringed as he was climbing up to the top rope. But he hit it. Even now, he could barely move. But Kurt Angle still has one of the best moonsaults in all of wrestling. Unfortunately, it did not connect. And Corbin hit the End of Days. And he pinned Kurt Angle here at WrestleMania. And Kurt Angle got on the microphone when the match was over, and he thanked the fans. He said, "For 20 years, I've had the time of my life. And for one last time, for old time's sake, I want you to chant those words at me to my music." And they played his music, and people chanted, "You suck," in admiration of Kurt Angle. There was a fan at ringside holding up a sign that said, "You never sucked." Where it was like, you never sucked, or "You never really sucked." Something like that, which I thought was great. I thought that was a great shot. I thought that was a great sign. Because he never, of course, he never sucked. Kurt Angle was the opposite. Kurt Angle, I've said this before, one of the greatest, I think you can make the case, of all time in wrestling. This guy had it all. And I was happy for him that he had a chance to, in front of his family and his kids, have one last match and have that little send-off here. And I'll say this much about Baron Corbin. Not that I'm his biggest fan, but after this, they better have some damn good plans for him to follow up on this. Because if they don't, and this turns out to be a situation where Baron Corbin just becomes another name in the machine and doesn't really pan out and doesn't really go anywhere, what a waste. What a waste for a final Kurt Angle match. I still say Kurt deserves, even if Corbin goes on to become a big star, I still say Kurt deserved better than this. He deserved better for his final match. But he got a nice moment there at the end, and that really is the best thing I could say about this. We had Demon Finn Balor and Bobby Lashley for the Intercontinental title. There was zero chance the Demon was losing here, I think we can all agree. Lashley hit a suicide spear through the ropes to the floor on Balor, almost cut the guy in half. That was his big move of the match. But in the end, Bobby Lashley got powerbombed, which was pretty impressive, by Finn Balor, and Balor hit the double foot stomp off the top to win back the Intercontinental Championship. They said, "Oh, the Demon won the Intercontinental title." Well, I don't think he'll be showing up as the Demon tonight or every week. So Finn Balor gets back the IC title, and we had Alexa Bliss come out to announce their fake attendance record of, I think it was 82,000 and change. That's the number they gave. And then, as if it wasn't late enough, we had R-Truth and Carmella come out for a 7-second dance break. They were just trolling us at this point. This late into the show, with this nonsense, they were just trolling us. And finally, at long last, winner take all for the Raw and SmackDown women's titles, Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair, and Becky Lynch. Joan Jett and the Blackheart sang Ronda to the ring first. This is their new thing now, where the champion, not all the time, but it seems like more often than not, the champion always enters first. I don't know when this trend began, but it seems to be happening more often. So Ronda's out first to her theme song, and then Charlotte had this pre-recorded helicopter entrance outside of the stadium as an homage to her father's entrance at the Great American Bash back in the 80s, much the same way. And actually, I think he may have had more than one helicopter entrance back then. So Ronda got Joan Jett, Charlotte got a chopper, and Becky Lynch got a smoke machine. That seems fair. They went on to have what was, I'm pretty sure it clocked in over 20 minutes, a little over 20 minutes. And this late in the show, they did as good a job as they were going to do of kind of keeping the crowd's attention. I was looking around. It wasn't like there were large chunks of people who had already left. I mean, some people probably did, but everybody was still there. Everybody was waiting for this match. I thought overall it was good. I don't think it rose to the level of great. I certainly have seen Ronda and Charlotte. I've seen Charlotte and Becky have much better matches with each other. I mean, if those matches were excellent, this was not excellent. This was good. I wouldn't say it was anything more than that. Finish came when Ronda and Becky, who finally we got to see them go one-on-one. Charlotte had been knocked out to the floor, so for at least a couple of minutes, we got Becky and Ronda one-on-one the way the match was originally intended to be. And Ronda got Becky up on her shoulders for her Piper's Pit finish, her little twisting slam finish. And when she went to go give her the twist, Becky took her backwards for a backslide and pinned her. And the finish came out of nowhere. For those of us here, and you probably saw some of the facial reactions even to the people in the crowd, it looked like they were stunned. And the reason for that was nobody saw that coming when it happened as the finish. I think there were probably a lot of people who either expected a submission, like one of them would get an armbar, or that Charlotte would be the one to eat the pin. And there's already some reports the finish was botched and it was supposed to be Charlotte tapping to Becky, which I don't know that that's true at all. I think Meltzer said that's bullshit. So be weary of any reports you read about a botched finish, because I'm not sure that's the case. If anything was botched, it may have had to do with Ronda's shoulders. Ronda's shoulders were not down for the entirety of the three count. Even watching it back on TV this morning, that much is obvious. And I thought they did a good job of creating confusion. If that was the intent, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't the plan at all. But they created this drama and uncertainty at the end that made you think, like, wait a minute, there's some controversy now coming out of this. What's going to happen tomorrow night? Maybe Ronda's going to stick around. Maybe there's going to be a rematch. Ronda apparently broke her hand. She had, according to Meltzer, a severely broken hand. I'm not sure if it was already hurt and she hurt it more in this match or if it got broken in this match. Where it may have happened, I don't know. Again, I wasn't way up, but I mean, I was in the stadium looking up on a screen where, you know, half of it was obstructed by bright light. So it's possible I just didn't see. Maybe you guys can chime in. Maybe there was a particular spot where it happened, but apparently she wrestled at least part of the match with a pretty badly broken hand. I don't know if that may have played a role in them doing the finish when they did. It definitely came across very sudden and very awkward. And there really was no great big spot in the match. I don't even think Charlotte hit her trademark. I was going to say, did she hit her moonsault? I think she did. I think she hit her moonsault at one point, if I'm not mistaken, but got caught maybe in a triangle or something. But I don't know. I just felt like this was meant maybe to go on a few more minutes, and there was one big, maybe final spot missing from it. It was very abrupt, and people definitely did not see it coming. But the match itself, the work itself, I thought was good, and people were into it. They weren't doing waves like they were during the Roman Reigns match. But that finish was just very much unexpected when it happened. And we'll see where the story goes from here. Again, Becky's going to be on Raw tonight. As soon as I get this review up, I'm actually out of here because I'm going to Raw tonight at Barclays. I'm not going to SmackDown. I'm done after tonight. I was even second-guessing tonight. But I'm going with a bunch of people, so I'll be at Barclays for Raw tonight. We'll see what they do, what the next step is in this story, or who Becky's first opponent is going to be. We do have the shakeup coming, so the shakeup may just shake everything up. It may not even matter what ends up happening tonight. But with this match, it just felt like there might have been a little chunk there at the end that got chopped out. It absolutely poured buckets after the show was over. Boy, did they dodge a bullet with the weather. It was cold. It definitely got colder as the night went on, but it didn't rain. There was supposed to be rain originally around midnight, which would have dumped just a tremendous amount of rain on the main event. It was like the main event ended, and not long after that, I mean, within the hour, the heavens opened up. And it was just pouring buckets of rain. It would have been a total washout had this weather pattern come in a little bit earlier than it did. But there was a lot of controversy coming out of the show because one of the only ways for people to get back home to where they were going was to take the train, was to take New Jersey Transit. Well, they didn't plan for the show to go as late as it did. And now New Jersey Transit is pointing the finger of blame at WWE. They're saying it's WWE's fault We didn't get alerted until very late in the game that they were planning to end the show at 12:30 in the morning. And by federal law or federal regulations, we have to send crews home at a certain time. And so a lot of the crews that would have been working and operating trains after the show was over, they sent them home. So instead of having trains coming in every 10 minutes, there are people standing out there in the pouring rain up Schitt's Creek. Nothing they could do. There's a lot of really pissed off people. The governor is all pissed off now. There was a press conference and he was asked about this. And he said, look, I'm not happy about this. We have to work harder to make sure this doesn't happen again. But yeah, it's funny how NJ Transit has just completely thrown WWE under the bus here. And you know what? I actually side with them on this. If they didn't alert the transit officials until very late that this show was going to go so late, then their hands are tied. That's up to WWE to let them know, to map out and time out these shows and let them know, hey, look, this show's not going to end until this hour, and we need to make sure that people can get home and that people can get out of the stadium. I'm going to tell you something. Between this and the light bullshit, this was not a good night for WWE when it comes to the way they treated their fans who came to the stadium last night. Absolutely disgusting what they did here. And another reason why these shows do not have to be this fucking long. It's not just, oh, it's so tiring to say. It is tiring, but it affects so many other things and so many other aspects of it. And between that and the light stuff, not a good look for WWE last night. Just not at all. We had 8 out of 10 titles in this company change hands last night. It had some good matches. It had some memorable moments. Chief among them, Kofi Kingston's big win. Some people might say old school John Cena. I think everybody could probably find something like that big moment that they liked on this show. And the Kofi thing was the best thing on the show by a wide margin. Kofi and Becky both got their big wins, as they should have. But what we were left with was a bloated show that, on the whole, I thought was good, but not as great as I'm seeing other people calling it. I think other people are severely overrating this show. And had I watched it on the network and not actually been there live, I really don't think my opinion would be drastically different. So chime in below. In the comments section, let me know if I'm right or wrong. Let me know what you thought of the show, or if you were at the show, or if you've been to other shows and other WrestleManias and have had issues like the light stuff and all that. Chime in on that too, because I was not the only person who was really pissed off about that last night. And it just affects your enjoyment of the show. And now you've got people watching at home and they're wondering, why is the crowd not into this match? Or why is the crowd starting a chant or starting this or starting that? And then you come to find out it wasn't because they just felt like doing it. It was because they couldn't see what the hell was going on. So anyway, chime in below. Give this video a thumbs up if you would be so kind. Vote in the Twitter poll. It's still open. At Solomonster, you can let me know thumbs up, thumbs down on WrestleMania. I still haven't even had a chance to talk about my thoughts on NXT TakeOver, on the which I thought was probably the best TakeOver show that they have ever done. And if I had to compare all of the shows, they're all different. It's not completely fair to do that. But I think, to the surprise of very few of you, NXT was by far the best show of the entire weekend. It is just so, it's just the length of the show and the way they have it structured and the matches that were on the show. Everything was just pitch perfect. So I thought the world of that show and the world of that main event, which I thought was the best NXT main event of all time. The G1 show I thought was good. I wasn't as sold on that show. But look, there was a lot of good wrestling this weekend. Some great wrestling this weekend. A lot to be happy about. But look, I call it like I see it. If my opinion is different on this WrestleMania show than yours, then so be it. But I was there live, and this is what I thought of it. And if you don't like it, tough shit. I don't know what to tell you. I'll be back soon with more on the YouTube channel. Please sub to the channel if you're not already subbed. Keep it locked in here. I don't know what's going up or when, but there'll be more content going up soon. Until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy Raw and SmackDown this week, and I'll see you back here real soon for more Sound Off content. Take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Harlem Heat 2000, Techno Team 2000, LOD 2000, WrestleMania 2000. Anything as a rule of thumb with 2000 in the name, you know it sucked.
The Solomonster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and coming soon, Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolomonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
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 Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster sounds off.